Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, and welcome to EAN Cast, weekly neurology. My name is Leena Haataja, and I work as a professor of child neurology and a senior consultant at the University Hospital of Helsinki, Finland. I'm also a co-chair in the ENA scientific panel, Child Neurology, and I'm very pleased to announce that the podcast topic of the month is child and adolescent neurology. It is of great importance to consider a life course perspective of brain health. Early brain development is a very complex process. It starts in the embryonic phase and proceeds until adulthood. In this podcast episode titled Supporting Early Brain Development, we have two guests. They are Liisa Lehtonen, professor and the director of the neonatal intensive care unit at the Turku University Hospital, Finland, and Silja Kosola, research director and primary investigator in adolescent medicine from the University of Helsinki and the Western Uusimaa Wellbeing Services County. Welcome and thank you for joining us today. Globally, 50 million infants are born preterm every year. Preterm birth is a leading cause of mortality in neonates, but also that increases risk for long-term neurological and developmental disability. Liisa Lehtonen, what are the most important issues in protecting the brains and later outcomes of preterm infants?
Oh, thank you for this question, Leena. There are several issues. I would like to divide them into three points which we should look after during the hospital care of preterm infants. The first point is to provide physiological stability and good nutrition for preterm infants. The growth rate is faster than in any other time point during the life course. The second point is to prevent morbidities such as intraventricular hemorrhages, periventricular leukomalacia, retinopathy or prematurity, infections, necrotizing enterocolitis, etc. Each of them increase the risk for later developmental problems. But a combination of them is even worse. All of them can be reduced, but it's not easy. It requires team effort and consistency, and the process is as good as the weakest link. And the third point is to optimize the sensory environment and human interaction in the NICU. In this area, many hospitals have taken huge steps during the last decade, and parents are given their role as the providers of touch and vocal interaction and sensitive and consistent caregiving. So I would put the issues into these three large topics.
Indeed, and sounds really encouraging that we have different ways really to protect brain already in neonates. You have, Liisa, also studied the role of different etiologies of preterm birth. Does the antenatal environment matter for the future prognosis of preterm infants?
Oh, it does matter. Preterm infants are not equal, unfortunately. They do not start from the same starting point. Some of them have suffered already antenatally from poor nutrition and poor growth, and they are in an increased risk for cognitive deficits because of the poor growth and poor brain growth, especially. Although good postnatal nutrition can compensate and catch-up growth can compensate this, as has been shown in some cohorts, like in our PIPARI study cohort. Some preterm infants have also suffered from harmful exposures, such as maternal smoking or alcohol or illicit drugs or even harmful medications. Of course, these exposures are even more harmful for full-term infants. But all of these exposures, they increase the risk of preterm birth itself. So preterm infants are overrepresented. The exposures are overrepresented among preterm infants. And they have been shown to affect the brain. In our PIPARI study, we have shown that the frontal lobes are smaller. They were 7% smaller in very preterm infants who were exposed to maternal smoking compared to unexposed children. And the cerebellum volumes were 5% smaller. So there are many background factors which derive from antenatal life, which make preterm infants unequal and the starting point unequal.
Yes, and surely impact of antenatal period applies really to all pregnancies, also term infants. Here perhaps we should note that careful pre-planning of pregnancy is really essential in situations, for example, if mom has to take anti-epileptic medication. That can't be underlined enough, truly.
Exactly. It's important to remind of medications, especially of valproate, which should be avoided during pregnancy as it affects the cognitive outcomes of the offsprings.
Particularly regarding preterm infants, have we been able to make a difference?
That's a good question, and it's a difficult question, and I think the answer is yes and no. It's not easy to improve the care to get robust improvements. In high-income countries which have been able to follow the development of very preterm infants, mortality has decreased without an increase in the disability rate, so that's a positive news. It means that the proportion of disability-free survival has increased. But at the same time, the bad news is that the risk of disabilities have not decreased. And it has been especially hard to improve the cognitive outcomes. In the INEO research study group, which is led by Dr. Prakash Shah from Toronto, we have studied the trends of outcomes of extremely preterm infants in 11 countries. Of those 11 countries, 6 countries improved their composite outcome, which included mortality and severe brain injury and treated retinopathy of prematurity. But at the same time, there were some countries which during the same time had an increased risk of severe brain injuries. So in summary, there are centers and there are countries which have been able to improve the outcomes, and we should learn from these countries and these centers. It starts from the organization of care, so that very preterm births are centralized to level 3 perinatal centers and all mothers get antenatal corticosteroids before very preterm birth.
You already gave examples what actions are to be done and are effective. Any other practical measures to do to tackle the remaining challenges in future?
We should remember that we need to optimize the care and the growth environment during the whole time period of brain development. And that starts during the antenatal environment. But of all of the time windows, neonatal care in hospital is the critical time period of brain development. During that time, it is very much in the hands of the healthcare team what the outcome is. We make countless medical decisions which affect the brain development. And we need to remember that all care is brain care, as the slogan is today. And we should consider all treatments from the perspective of long-term effects. We also have to remember that it is an essential part of neonatal care to support the formation of a loving and strong relationship between the parents and the child, because that forms the basis for parenting and later child development.
Thank you. The children who have had early life adversities, like those born preterm, may be even more prone to modern lifestyle stressors at school age compared to peers. One of the timely stressors seems to be excessive social media and internet use among school children. Celia Kosola, you are an expert in adolescent medicine. How concerned you are?
Thank you. I'm actually quite concerned. As you mentioned, there are children who are already predisposed to different types of developmental issues from birth, or actually antenatally. But then, considering the current lifestyle environment that we're living in, it actually has a much broader spectrum of children who are also predisposed to problems. We know from several studies conducted in all European countries that sleep is reducing among teenagers. And if we consider the human brain, adolescence is a second window of opportunity, because it also goes through a sort of a growth spurt in that time period. The first areas to develop during adolescence, to mature during adolescence, are around the basal ganglia and amygdala, which are responsible for the great big feelings. And anyone who has been living close to teenagers or working with them recognizes the big feelings. And the last areas to develop are the prefrontal cortex areas, which are responsible for more executive functions, such as cognitive control, impulse control, attention, guidance, and so on. And if a person sleeps too little, these developing skills cannot be taken into use in their fullest potential. And this means that the sort of regression that we also see during adolescence, that the great cognitive skills that they already have, the broad vocabulary that they have, is also takes like a few steps back. And if you're always tired, this is even worse. However, there's another big issue besides sleep that has changed, and that's digital media use. Young people themselves also recognize the importance of digital media to their cognitive health. They call their brains ping pong brains because they skip from one task to another, and they're very used to watching short videos, but not so much in concentrating on something that requires long-term attention spans. They also describe the current era of one with brain rot. They feel more stupid than they did before because they spend hours on end on their digital devices. For instance, in our study, where we had screenshots from the phones of first-year academic high school students, they actually spent 6 hours on their phones every single day, no difference between work days and weekends.
Not much time for schoolwork, sounds like that.
Yes, so the phones also were not used for learning purposes. They were used for social media, for gaming, for online shopping. And then they use their laptops for actual schoolwork, which means that the exposure of a basic first-year high school student in Finland is probably close to 13 or 14 hours per day. That's a significant proportion of the day where they should be also interacting with each other. They should be learning many, many skills, also in physical activity and so on. And I am left wondering what will happen to brain plasticity later on in life, because it could well be reduced if time is spent so much time on screens. And so what if this type of person gets a stroke later on in life? Will they have the same potential to benefit later on?
Yes, very, very important questions. I was just wondering, is there a sex difference in internet use?
Yes, according to several studies, males are more prone to be dependent or more interested in gaming. In several studies, the percentage of males who have problematic gaming online is around 1 to 9%. And that hasn't changed at all during the recent years. But what we've seen among girls then is a steep increase in problematic internet use. And this seems to be mostly due to social media, which attracts more of the females than it does with males. So between 2017 and 2023, the percentage of girls with problematic internet use has risen from around 4% to now about 16%. It's a very, very quick and steep increase.
Indeed. What about mobile phones at school? There has been a lot of discussion whether they should be allowed or whether they should be banned altogether. What is your opinion?
I think that school bans are smart. They send a very clear message to young kids themselves that schools are a place of learning, that you're concentrating on the lessons that the educators are giving you, but also on the social environment of learning to live with your peers. We know that loneliness is also a risk to brain health. And if you don't develop the social skills at that certain period of sensitivity, which is during adolescence, you're very unlikely to develop them later on. Schools are a place for building brain capital, for increasing the cognitive skills of young people, and for building a brighter future. And I think that the about dozen European countries who have already banned phones from schools are leading the way.
There's also discussion of increased loneliness among adolescents. What's your opinion on that?
It seems very interesting how the same people who say that we should not ban phones in schools often say that this is because young people who feel lonely need to have their phone at least so that they wouldn't feel so bad during recess. But these people may not know that actually lonely people use the internet and social media more than the other people do. And when it's a sort of a double-edged sword, because then when you're more online all the time, you're missing out on the live interactions that you could have had during school days. And then you end up even more lonely.
So these really feel, you know, sorrowful trends in this society. I just wonder, we really look for research looking, what are these long-term effects of brain health of these adolescents prone to excessive social media, sleep deprivation, and less peer relationships.
Yes, I agree. We're living in a time of great uncertainty. But I think there are guiding principles that we should remember more. Technology should solve problems, not make more of them. And UNESCO, the Organization for Learning and Education, has also stated that we should critically assess the situations where technology helps people learn, and what are those situations? What are the technological solutions that should be used? And then limit the use to those situations, not sort of do the technology everywhere, technology first, not in that way, but with a critical mind. And also considering children and young people, we should also remember the precautionary principle, so that when we don't have solid evidence of actual brain damage due to smartphones or such, but we have abundance of evidence stating these associations and also observational studies where the more you use, the lonelier you feel, and so on, that we should remember that we are talking about developing brains.
So altogether, it seems that all care is brain care, but also environmental influence all through, from antenatal environment to environment where we live, is extremely important to brain health. Altogether, with evidence-based practices of antenatal and neonatal care, many improvements have been achieved in protecting early brain development and lifelong brain health in children. However, it seems that there are still global challenges to overcome in antenatal surveillance and neonatal care practices, and multidisciplinary efforts are truly required. Regarding school-age children, there certainly is, I think, a take-home message to adults. Stopping excessive internet use is an urgent action to protect maturation and long-term brain health in children and young adolescents. Thank you, Liisa Lehtonen and Silja Kosola, for joining us today.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.